I think you're on mute.
Chief Williams.
Here.
Ms. Biggs.
Here.
Chief Branch.
Present. Present.
Ms. Carrera. Ms. Chapman. Sheriff Crawford.
Here.
Judge Dennehy.
Here.
Mayor Dole.
Here.
Officer Evans.
Here.
Ms. Hernandez.
Here.
Mr. Huyang.
Here.
Mr. Johnson. Mr. Katyal.
Here.
Mr. Macon.
Here.
Judge Malveaux.
Here.
Mr. Miles.
Here.
Ms. Peterson.
Here.
Mr. Porter. Sheriff Roper.
Here.
Colonel Settle.
Here.
Ms. Smith.
Here.
Superintendent Smith.
Here.
Mr. Taylor.
Here.
Chief Wright.
Here.
Senator Morrissey.
This is Matt Wheeler on behalf of Senator Morrissey, who will be joining shortly.
Okay, Senator McClellan.
Here.
Delegate Delaney.
Here.
And Delegate Jones. We have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Hyman. Thank all the board members for taking your time today and attend this virtual meeting. I'm hopeful that we're going to be able to meet in person at some point in 2021. I'm just not quite there yet, but thanks to the Zoom world for getting us all together. Got to remind everybody that the meeting will be recorded in order to comply with the Freedom of Information laws, and that the recording will be available online later. Having a tough time this morning. Next thing on the agenda is approval of the minutes. Hopefully they were sent out ahead. Are there any corrections, deletions, or additions to the minutes of the December 17, 2020 Criminal Justice Services Board meeting?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Chief Branch, I move that we accept the minutes as presented.
Yeah, of course. Mary Biggs, I second that.
All right, no further discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, great. The motion carries. The minutes are approved. We'll move on now to the director's report. I'll call on Director Shannon Dion to give the director's report. Ms. Dion?
Thank you, Chief Williams, and good morning, everyone. It's wonderful to see you all here on the Zoom call. My report is pretty short today, but I do want to just start off with a quick shout out to the entire DCJS team. We have now been working during a pandemic for a year now. We've been 100% telework, and they have done an incredible job of transitioning very quickly and making sure that all of our mandates and responsibilities and the support that we provide to you and other people involved with the criminal justice system has been seamless. And so I am just here, I really just want to publicly shout out to everyone on the team, because they've just been tremendous, and they continue to inspire me to continue being strong and carrying on. So thank you all to DCJS. The other thing I wanted to highlight to you is, and I don't know if many of you know this, but I'm half Japanese, and my grandfather was a member of the 44th 2nd Infantry. He was born and raised in Hawaii, and so I wanted to share that with you, because obviously we've had some recent attacks on Asian Americans in our country. And honestly, whenever something like this happens, whether it's with a firearm, a vehicle, whatever device, it's just another painful reminder of how much work needs to be done in our country so that these types of things stop happening. And as soon as that had happened last week, we had started aggressively reaching out to Asian American communities in Virginia when another shooting happened in Boulder. And so I'm here asking you for help, because we have a program that is 100% focused on teaching regular people like us who are not law enforcement, who are, you know, not in the military, just regular people, how to respond if something happens. And it's a wonderful class that used to be in person. It taught people the confidence to respond and to trust their instincts and to get away from the danger. And it's evidence-based, and it's a wonderful program. Everyone in my agency is required to take it. And due to the pandemic, we have transitioned right now so that we are delivering it online in a webinar base. It's still a live class, so you can still talk to our instructors and ask questions. And so I highly encourage you to share this with your organizations, with your constituencies. It's 2 hours, it's free. And so I'm gonna try to put in the chat room as soon as I finish the link to our website that has, you can register for any of the pre-scheduled webinars. So we've got a mixture of webinars that are pre-scheduled, like during the day, some are in evening classes. But we also recognize that many folks work during the day. And so our team, we've got a full-time person and two part-time instructors that are available to teach a specific group of people. If there's some comfort in kind of attending a class like this with people you're comfortable with, we can do it after normal business hours. We can do it on the weekends. And once we start opening up with the vaccine rolling out, we are gonna try to resume in-person classes as much as possible, because it is, it's very impactful when it's in person. And you also learn just really simple things to like, just to save lives if someone gets hurt, like how to stop the bleed, because we know that on average it takes about 3 minutes on average for law enforcement to arrive at a scene, and 7 minutes on average for EMS folks to arrive. So there's a window there that is critical for people to know what to do and have the confidence to do it. So please, I really do want to highlight that class that we have available that's free for everyone. The other update that I have for you is, and I don't think I've mentioned this before, but over the last 9-10 months, we have been having what we're calling courageous conversations. It's not a name that we made up. We've kind of taken it from other folks, but we have been working with 5 localities in the Commonwealth with a team of people that represent the local law enforcement agency and marginalized communities. And really we've just been providing a neutral space together with UVA for those communities and representatives to come together and have, you know, just really honest conversations about law enforcement policing and trying to strengthen relationships and understanding between law enforcement personnel and the communities that they serve. The focal areas have been on implicit bias, use of force, and the recruitment and training of officers. And it's been a very rewarding experience. It continues on. The locations are collaborating on a project that both the law enforcement and community members agree to take on that strengthens one of those areas. And while DCJS is not a part of those conversations, we are observing, we're learning, we're listening, and we're supporting through our resources. And I can tell you that it's, everything about my job is both personally and professionally rewarding, but this one in particular has been just incredible to be a part of. We're investing our time into these conversations because it's the criminal justice system at work. And I'm encouraged to tell you that after a lot of listening and learning to people talk about their challenges and pain and trauma as either a marginalized community or law enforcement professional, it's really encouraging to hear that at the end of the day, everyone really just wants the same thing. Everyone wants officers to be well-resourced and well-trained, and everyone wants officers to be safe, and everyone wants communities and people to be able to go home whenever they're finished with their business, and everyone wants citizens to be safe as well. citizens seem to really want to understand why law enforcement do the things that they do, and officers generally want to understand the communities that they serve and the culture and why it is that some communities fear the police. So it's been very rewarding work that we're doing, and we will continue to help support all law enforcement agencies have really strong relationships with the communities that they serve, and whatever gaps that we can help fill in, we're going to do that one locality at a time. It also happens to be one of our many mandates, so that's always nice when the need in the criminal justice system matches up with something that we're tasked with doing. So with that, that concludes the updates that I have for you that I thought you would be interested in. And so if you have any questions for me, either about anything I've talked about today or anything else that DCJS works on, I'm happy to take that up now or some other time in another venue. But with that, I'll turn it over to you, Chief Williams.
All right. Thanks, Ms. Dionne. Any questions for Director Dionne?
This is Carolyn Dahl. Could you just give the name of that training that you were talking about initially that's available? The title, I guess.
Yes, it's Active Attack Program. And thank you for reminding me to put the link into the chat room. But I will also send an email out to the entire board with more information about that so that you'll have it at your fingertips as well.
Thanks.
Anything else? Okay, great. Thank you. Move on to committee reports. First, nominations committee. Edward Macon, give us an update on the nominations committee.
Sure. Thank you, Chief. The nominations committee did meet this morning at 9 o'clock. We had a quorum. Mr. Capjaw, Sheriff Crawford, and I were all there, and staff had done an excellent job of preparing the brief agenda. What we considered were two vacancies, one on the PSAB, the Private Security Services Advisory Board. There is a vacancy for the armored car representative. And then we also considered a vacancy on the CASA CJA Advisory Board. That's the Court-Appointed Special Advocate and Children's Justice Act Advisory Board. There was one applicant for each vacancy, and fortunately they were both highly qualified. The applicant for the Private Security Services Armored Car Representative is Retha Marshall, and she is currently a regional training manager and armored car instructor for Brinks. Comes highly recommended. We considered her credentials, and we recommend her to the full board to be appointed to the PSAB as the armored car representative for a 4-year term starting April 1 of this year. For the CASA CJA vacancy, we considered the application of Janine Panzera, who is an attorney, and she's currently the executive director of the Henrico CASA. So again, just wonderful credentials. She's been involved in CASA for over 10 years at the local level. We recommend her to the board, to you all, for a 4-year term beginning. That term would start July 1, 2021. So with that, unless there are any questions, I would make that motion that the board approve both nominations for the 4-year terms that I mentioned.
All right. Do we have a second from Mr. Macon's motions?
Jagdish Katyal, second.
Is there any further discussion?
Can I just make a comment on Janine Panzera? I've known her as a CASA worker here in Henrico. She's excellent. Her team's excellent. Also, I taught her in law school. So, you know, shows my age. I'm an adjunct at U of R. Oh, back then I was. So nice to see my students get, you know, promoted and all that. So
it's always a good thing. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Any further discussion? Any recusals on either of these appointments? All right. All in favor?
Aye. I don't know. Should I recuse myself because I know her?
I don't think so.
Daughter. Okay. Aye.
All right. Any opposed? All right. Those two passed.
And Chief, again, I just want to thank DCJS staff for the excellent job. They put together a great agenda and had everything lined up. So it's got to be the most efficient committee going, thanks to staff. So we appreciate it.
Yeah, we're very spoiled with the staff at DCGS. They are spot on as always. Thanks for that. Old business is next. Is there any old business to be discussed? All right, hearing none, we'll move on to new business. I think we've got some grants, community assessment grants for youth and gang violence. And Laurel Marks, manager of juvenile and child welfare section, DCGS, will give us an update.
Morning.
Hey.
The appropriations language from the 2020 General Assembly session gave DCJS the responsibility to provide funding for youth and gang violence prevention grants to six cities: Hampton, Newport News, Norfolk, Richmond, Roanoke, and Petersburg, to conduct community assessments for youth and gang violence prevention initiatives. Due to the COVID-related delay in a final state budget bill, we did not start at the beginning of the fiscal year. Delegate Price, who sponsored the related bill authorizing this program, thought that that turned out to be fortuitous because the landscape shifted significantly during the pandemic, and a delay in an assessment position would position these cities to hopefully be able to use their assessments to apply competitively for federal Youth Promise Act grant funds in the future. Because the cities are listed in the Appropriations Act, we are not requiring an official application, but we need to take it before you because if it will be awarded in the form of a grant to these six localities. DCJS will work with them on how these assessments are conducted. It is recommended that the Criminal Justice Services Board approve the award of $25,000 to each of the following cities: Hampton, Newport News, Norfolk, Richmond, Roanoke, and Petersburg. I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions for Ms. Marks? All right, I'll entertain a motion that the board vote to approve the award of $25,000 each to the following cities: Hampton, Newport News, Norfolk, Richmond, Roanoke, and Petersburg.
This is Carol Adol. So move.
And I'd be glad to second. Angie Carrera. Sorry, I was a little late.
No, thanks for joining us. All right, we have a motion that's been properly seconded. Any more discussion on these grants?
One recusal, Sheriff Crawford, Petersburg.
All right. Any more recusals? All right. Do we need a roll call vote, Ms. Hyman, or can we do it?
It's up to you, Chairman Williams.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? All right. We'll move this along. Next is the Law Enforcement Grants Body-Worn Camera Grant Program. Tracy Matthews, welcome.
Good morning, thank you. You have before you the proposed budget for the Body-Worn Camera Grant Program for FY21, totaling $2,582,884. This program required a 50-50 match of state funds from local sources. The total state funds to be awarded would be $1,291,444 in local cash or in-kind match of the same, $1,291,442. This would fund 61 new grant projects, which either creates, expands, or maintains local body-worn camera grant programs throughout the Commonwealth. If approved, the grants will be awarded for a period of 1 year, beginning April 1st, 2021, and ending on March 30th, 2022. This proposed budget funds all but one application under the solicitation. This applicant was unable to provide the localities match as required by the statute. Any questions?
Yeah, I have one. Should we put that on motion, second, and then discussion, or can I ask it now?
Just
out of curiosity, I went through the grants, and I know most of them were approved as recommended or as requested, but some of them went higher than requested, and some of them went lower than requested. What was the rationale behind that? Like, for example, I'll point out one. I think it was the Washington County Sheriff's Department. They requested $49,527, but the recommended was $73,882. What was the rationale behind that?
Most of the corrections were the result of them submitting applications that had in or calculations of their match was incorrect. And so when we corrected the match, either they had to increase their local amount or we had to decrease the state amount that they requested.
Okay. And that applies also with granting lesser funds, right?
Yes, the calculations was too much. Some actually added the state total for the full project and then added their local match to that for the full project. So it would have been a total that was over the actual project amount.
Thank you.
All right, any more questions?
Yes, Mr. Matthews, you said there was one location that wasn't able to qualify. Are we at privy to know that location?
Yes, that was the town of Grottos.
Anything further? All right, the chair will entertain a motion to award the body-worn camera grants totaling $2,582,884.
Chief Wright, I'll make the motion.
We have a second?
I'll make the second.
Did you get that, Ms. Hyman?
Mr. Macon made the second?
Yes. Okay. Is there any more discussion? Any recusals on these grants?
Yes. Mary Diggs, I need to recuse myself for number 13 with the town of Christiansburg, but can vote on the rest.
Chief Branch, I sent my recusal sheet in for number 17, town of Culpeper, and number 61, Withfield Community College.
Thanks, Chief. Any more recusals? All right. Other than those recusals we heard, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Are any opposed? All right. Great. Thanks. And Mr. Matthews, the Substantial Risk Protective Order grants.
Yes, sir. You also have before you a proposed budget for the Substantial Risk Protective Order grant program for FY21, totaling $37,795. That will fund four grantees. These funds would support local training projects designed to assist agencies with carrying out the requirements set forth in the new Substantial Risk Protective Order statutes. If approved, these grants would be awarded also for 1 year period, April 1st through 2021 through March 30th, 2022. Any questions on these grants?
All right, hearing no questions, Mr. Matthews, thanks. Thanks for that. I'll entertain a motion to award the Substantial Risk Protective Order grants to four localities, total amount of $37,795.
Chief Branch, I so move.
We have a second?
Sheriff Crawford, I'll second.
All right. Are there any recusals from any of these four grants?
Colonel Settle, Virginia State Police, recusal. I sent my form in earlier.
Thank you, Colonel. Any more?
Chief Branch, same. Line item 4 to Virginia State Police, and my recusal has been sent in.
Thank you all for that. All right. Other than the recusals, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Are there any opposed? All right. Great. Thank you, Mr. Matthews. Moving on now to topic of military waivers. Harvey Powers, Division Director of Law Enforcement Services, will present. Harvey?
Good morning. Thank you, Chief. The 2020 special session of the General Assembly passed some legislation to prohibit localities and agencies employing law enforcement officers, which would include police departments, sheriff's office, and so forth, from obtaining certain types of equipment. This list of equipment is now listed in the Virginia Code under section 2.2-5515 and 15.2-1721.1. The items as listed in the code are, there are 8 items and I'm going to read them out to you. Weaponized unmanned aerial vehicles, aircraft that are configured for combat or are combat coded and have no established commercial flight application. Number three, grenades or similar explosives or grenade launchers from a surplus program operated by the federal government. Four, armored multi-wheeled vehicles that are mine resistant, ambush protected and configured for combat, also known as MRAPs, from a surplus program operated by the federal government. Five, bayonets. Six, firearms of 50 caliber or higher. Seven, ammunition of 50 caliber or higher. And eight, weaponized tracked armored vehicles. It also provided that any agency or locality that already had these prohibited equipment could only continue to use them if that agency sought a waiver from the CJSB. And so in response to this, on January of this year, a waiver request form was developed and emailed to all law enforcement agencies statewide. DCJS has also discussed this waiver at various other police forums. It was also distributed through the Virginia Sheriff's Association and the Virginia Association of Chiefs of Police. I'm going to attempt to share my screen here, and share. So if everybody can see that, this is the actual waiver that was made available. It is also on our website so that agencies can, request. You can see the date it was requested, the name of the agency, the chief executive officer of the agency, a line for item description, a serial number or VIN if applicable, and some details of the public safety purpose of the item. You'll note at the bottom, we requested them to include, or agencies to include, departmental general orders or any specific examples of the use of the equipment as they saw fit. The code does not require them to do this, but we thought for consideration by the CJSB that that sort of thing would be helpful. I'm gonna turn this screen off unless anybody has any further they need to see on the form. I am going to be back here in just a second. All right. You will note that the waiver, the Code of Virginia directed agencies or localities to submit their waivers to DCJS by March 1st of 2021. To this date, 17 agencies have submitted waiver requests for 19 different items. Two of the items that a waiver was sought for do not require under the code an actual waiver. Localities impacted by this, these two localities have been notified that their waiver was unnecessary. The remaining 17 items from 15 departments include 13 MRAPs, one Caspier armored vehicle, which is like an MRAP, and three 50 caliber Barrett rifles. Prior to the May meeting of the CJSB, each member of the CJSB will receive a copy of all these waivers and supporting documents as submitted to DCJS. However, I have one addition that I'd like to make. Those 17 items do not include a new category. About a week ago, several agencies acquired from DCJS about getting a waiver for their 12-gauge shotguns. The language of the new law includes firearms of 50 caliber or higher, and also ammunition of 50 caliber or higher. Due to the legal definition of firearm and the common definition of caliber, this appears to include all 12-gauge shotguns in police service. We are working for clarifying language on this matter, but until that time, the Virginia Sheriff's Association and the Virginia Association of Chiefs of Police have formally requested a waiver for all agencies in the Commonwealth for shotguns as used and deployed. I am available for any additional questions on this.
This is Carolyn Dull. I have a question. If an agency doesn't request a waiver but has these items and maybe they want to turn them in or something, what happens if they don't want to keep them, say?
I couldn't give you the specific answer on that. Having worked a little bit with military surplus in my prior career in Richmond, I know there is something of an established process for returning property to the military if it's not going to be continue to be utilized by a locality. So there is some sort of protocols in place, but I'm uncertain about the specifics to it.
Any other questions? I think we're going to need to do something with these 12 gauge shotguns because I don't think we need to pull them right now from all the departments while we're not sure. My sense is likely the General Assembly was not intending 12 gauge shotguns. And as an example, we use the 12 gauge shotguns to deploy less lethal rounds, beanbag rounds. We're trying not to use deadly force in situations. Somebody's got a knife or something and we shoot them in the thigh with a beanbag and we take them in custody. And if we have to pull those out, then that's going to take a non-lethal or less lethal option off the table. And more people that we don't want to harm, you know, are going to be harmed. So it seems prudent for us, especially since we don't know and rather than have DCGS inundated with, you know, all kinds of waivers when we're not sure that's really what they intended, that maybe we should waive it now, even if it's a temporary waiver until we get clarification. But that's my thought. What does everyone else think?
Well, basically, if it's used for that, then that's correct. But technically, yeah, I shoot guns. Okay. Technically, a 12 gauge slug, if it's a slug, is actually 0.7 some caliber. So it's larger than a 50 caliber. So I understand where, you know, you can say that if it's outlaws 50 caliber ammunition or above, then it would be the 12 gauge slug would be eliminated or part of it. But the actual weapon, 12 gauge, if it's used to shoot the beanbags, it's unclear. So whenever it's unclear, it's probably better to get waivers so that no department is, let's just put it this way. I don't want to defend a chief in court if somebody decides to prosecute on this. So not that they would, but I think what I'm saying is it's better to be safe than sorry. It might take a little bit more work with all these waivers, but until we get a clarification, I think to be on the safe side so that the sheriff's departments can keep their 12 gauge shotguns, that they should go ahead and request a waiver.
Quick question, Harvey. The beanbags that are being talked about, are they the same things that are used inside of corrections?
Yes, they are, Mr. Taylor. Yes, and I was going to ask that question because we have 12 gauge in Department of Corrections as well. So it's not just law enforcement.
Ma'am, so I wonder, will that also be affected? Because they do cause damage. It depends on where they hit you at.
Oh, they can cause damage. Absolutely.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Powers. Right,
but it is a law. It is indeed a non-lethal. But you know, even during the protesting over this country, you know, this past few months ago, you know, there was a lot of discrepancy in reference to lethal force and non-lethal force when it comes to law enforcement and what they use or consider lethal. So I'm just concerned about some of the language when it comes to that. You know, so I would also like to hear more about where that shotgun fits in or whatever. And also more about the 50 caliber thing, you know, when you're talking about humanity and you're talking about 50 caliber, that doesn't say humanity to me.
Mr. Powers, may I ask a question?
Yes, sir.
This is only for those shotguns that were acquired through the military surplus program. Is that correct?
It is our understanding that it applies to all shotguns, not just shotguns acquired through military surplus.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Chief Williams, I have a comment.
Yes.
And I think, and I'm looking at this from a spirit of the law, letter of the law thing. Mm-hmm. I seriously do not believe that the intent was to include the shotguns. I think it was the military style assault weapons. I think that's what the intent of the bill was. But however, spirit of the law, letter of the law, I think I would agree with Michael. I think it's better to be safe than sorry until it goes back to the General Assembly with some necessary corrections to this particular bill. I'd be in favor definitely of doing the waiver just to be on the safe side. Now, the Mr. Powers, he did say the Sheriff's Association and Chiefs, but you know, another concern I have is with DOC, if that's a standard issue. We probably need to find a way to loop in the Department of Corrections if possible to get this get those agencies in compliance with the current existing law.
Right. And I think what I'm saying is, I think this board can grant a waiver. Am I right, Mr. Powers?
Yes, sir. The granting of a waiver falls to the CJSB for action.
So what I'm saying is, I think it would be prudent for us to do that rather than turn around and wait for, you know, 120 jurisdictions.
Right.
I guess that's what I'm saying.
Exactly. That's what I was saying. Get into immediate compliance. That's
all right.
I would make that motion, Mr. Chair, that we do grant that with that special exception for the 12 gauge.
I'll second that motion, Michael Hugh Young.
All right.
Hey, Chief Williams, can I say something?
Absolutely.
I'm a little bit concerned, unfortunately, from the legal background. The waiver, as I understand the law, the waiver is a locality requesting a waiver, a locality who employs law enforcement. That makes me a little bit concerned about the Chief of Police Association or the Sheriff's Association requesting a waiver on behalf of their localities. I agree that I don't think this was ever intended to include 12-gauge shotguns, but you know, that's the nature of the General Assembly sometimes, is that the law doesn't come out the way that we thought it was going to come out. And it would concern me to accept a waiver on behalf of an organization, not a locality. That's all I have to say.
I understand that. I guess what I'm saying is, can the board, can we do a blanket waiver for Department of Corrections and all law enforcement sheriff's office until we ferret this out? If legally we can't, then we cannot. And then what we'll have to do is get waivers from every police, sheriff's office, and every DOC. Who's can give us that legal advice? Mr. Powers, you know?
So I might jump in and just, I think the board does have counsel at the AG's office, but the question I guess also could be that if you're voting on waivers at the May meeting, does the submission of the request from the associations like cover, you know, or does that waiver request stand on behalf of those agencies so that in May you can hear more information?
Well, what are we doing in the meantime?
This is Michael Hugh Young. I when I seconded that motion, my understanding at that when Sheriff Branch or Chief Branch made the motion, I didn't take it to be a blanket waiver. I took it to be like each entity that wanted to get a waiver should submit a waiver. I haven't read the statute, but from what it's been explained, if Judge Denke is correct that it has to be, Denke is correct that it has to be a locality, then I agree with her that, yeah, unfortunately it takes a lot of work, but whoever the locality is needs to sign a waiver. I think what I was trying to stress was that just to be safer than sorry is to whoever wants to keep these shotguns going through the proper channels should try to get a waiver until the General Assembly can fix, you know, the statute and intend what it means to intend. So that's why I seconded the motion. If that's not the case, and if it's a blanket waiver, then I withdraw my second because I didn't think of it as a blanket waiver for us to decide, because I don't think legally as a board, we can interpret that statute the way we want to interpret it. I think if it says that the locality must apply for a waiver, then I think it must be applied by, must apply for a waiver. I don't think we as a board can just say, well, this is what we intended, the General Assembly, so we're just going to give a blanket waiver. I don't think we have the authority to do that. That's just my viewpoint. As the judge says, you know, we attorneys and tend to look at that statute, because I know a lot of times, you know, judge, you have attorneys coming into your court and say, yeah, it was the intent of the General Assembly to do this. We don't know. So I think just to be cautious, we should get those waivers from each entity or each locality.
So
Senator McClellan has her hand up. Maybe she can.
I'm sorry. Yes, Senator.
Yeah. So I'm actually reading the statute. Of course, not even going to get to intent if the statute mm-hmm. is unambiguous. Mm-hmm. It says, no agency of the Commonwealth or director or chief executive of any agency or department employing law enforcement officers as defined by blah, blah, blah. And then it says, unless such agency, director, or chief executive has received a waiver to use such items from the Criminal Justice Services Board. And it says that it has to be limited to special weapons and tactics units or other equivalent unit use only. So I do think it's difficult to have a blanket waiver when the statute, in my opinion, is clear that it has to be from the director or the chief executive of the specific agency, and they have to have a specific waiver request. So we cannot, in my opinion, that is not a blanket waiver from one individual on behalf of everybody without that specific. I mean, it sounds like we have the specific weapon, but we can't do a blanket waiver, in my opinion.
I agree.
I would just say that, one, I probably can't comment too much because there's the potential, I guess, that my court could see this, but just echoing up the concerns about a blanket waiver, and anytime you see a blanket waiver, I think that's a concern.
Okay. So,
Chief Williams?
Yes.
Let me suggest an alternative that may or may not work. I don't know. But could the DCJS board, could we vote that any waiver request received for 12-gauge shotguns or shotgun ammunition be approved without further action of the board?
I don't know.
I don't know either, but I mean, it might help a little bit. If we applied it to a specific weapon, it might allow people with a pretty quick application to keep those weapons. Because, I mean, every law enforcement agency I know has 12-gauge shotguns, I assume.
Well, they do. But, you know, the example I gave about the beanbag rounds, you know, they get used on patrol because you don't have time for a tech team necessarily come out when somebody's got a knife. So that's going to change. Some of the utilities are going to be gone, and unfortunately there may be some loss of life. But I get it. I mean, the law is the law. We got to follow the law. I totally get that.
Chief Williams.
Yes.
If I can say something.
Absolutely.
Whether or not you may or may not actually have the authority to do what Judge Zeneke just recommended. However, I don't think it's something that needs to be done because the language of the bill also allows agencies to continue to use a one of the items in the list if they have submitted a waiver request until such time as the board acts on that waiver request. So, so I think there's a, essentially there's a safe harbor provision. So if those waivers, so if the waiver request comes in, those agencies are fine. I believe when Harvey was presenting about the other waivers we had received for the AMRAPs and all that, the whole idea was this was informational to let you know the new law came into effect, this is the process. And then at the May meeting, you're gonna get this giant packet of everybody's waiver requests. So these get, and so I think the shotgun issue was just because it had popped up recently to let everyone know this is an issue coming up recently, but that the intent was again, at the May meeting is when the board would be tasked with acting on all the waiver requests to either affirm or deny them. And at that point in time, any waivers for the continued use of shotguns could be considered.
I get that, but didn't it say that they'd be received by March 1st of 2021?
Technically, no. I mean, that's the effective date of the law.
Okay.
But there is the there is nothing specific in the new sections that are in that.
So we're all just going to start doing our waivers today? And that'll be okay, in your opinion? Or next week or whatever.
I mean, so under the language of the code is if a waiver request has been received until the board acts upon it. So
once we submit it, then we'll be okay to continue using them until we're told yes or no.
That would be a question for the local attorneys as opposed to DCJS. So I would point to language in the code to bolster that position, but I will not be able to definitively say that, no.
Okay.
Chief Williams, this is Carolyn Dahl. I have a question, and it's based on my knowledge, which is I never understood why something was called a 30-06. So is the 12-gauge, when it translates to caliber, that's how it comes in? I mean, why are they in that 50 caliber thing? Is that?
Yeah, I think it's diameter. So I think a 12 gauge is like 0.7 something.
Yeah, it's like a, you can, it's 0.72 or something like that. So it's like, if there's such a thing, it's 70 caliber. So it's,
Okay, well.
It can cause some damage. Yes, it can hurt you.
so do we, if we're going to tell all the police departments and everything to do a waiver, should we have some kind of statement that this is until we get clarification on the legislation, or do we need to take any action that way to make it clear that we're not saying you can keep them forever? Because if the intent was really for them not to be used, we don't want it hanging out there for 10 years with this waiver. So do we need to do anything just to make it official that we're looking at it at a temporary basis until there's clarifying legislation or interpretation by the AG's office or something?
Well, I think what I'm hearing is all the agencies are going to have to file waivers. And once they file the waiver, then by filing the waiver, they're going to be okay until this board tells them that they're not okay. Is that right, Mr. Cotter? Is that?
So, yes, Chief Williams, that's correct, which is the board will, once the waiver request, under the terms of the code, if the board waiver is received, they're allowed to continue to use it until the board acts on it. It is currently the plan that the agenda at the May meeting of the board will be to act upon the waivers. So I do not think this is, unless the board, for whatever reason, chooses not to act, but in terms of the waivers will be before the board at the May meeting to either vote to allow the continued use of a particular item or to vote not to allow the use of a particular item based on each waiver request received.
I'm just
wondering. Hey, Jennifer, what's the code section again? So I know what, I just like to read it. What is
2.2-5515. 15.2-17 something or other. 1721.1. And just give me one copy. 11.3.
Okay.
I'm sorry, what was the last one?
52-11.3.
52.
That's the one specific to state police. So the 2.2 is for state agencies, the 15.2 is for local police and sheriffs, and then the 52 is for state police.
And Carl, get these Carl own
put that into the chat room if you guys refer to it.
It helps. We were going to send you information about this to include links and the actual code sections so that you can start reviewing it, and we can send you the waivers that we've received so far to give you plenty of time to review that for the May meeting. And then as we get additional waivers for these shotguns, we'll send them in packages to you.
Yeah, so I'm just wondering if May is going to be enough time, Director Dion, because we're you're going to get them from every law enforcement agency. And corrections. So I'm wondering if that's going to be enough time. I don't know. I guess we'll see. Because I starting today, when we send this out, then, you know, the floodgates are going to open. But we're going to have to, serial numbers from all my shotguns, all kind of stuff, is going to take a little bit of time. So I don't know if you get them, you know, today. And then the ammunition as well, right? So we have to enumerate how many slugs, how many buckshot, how many less lethal.
Chief Williams, for clarity's sake, this is Harvey Powers again, sir. If I can speak to that, the serial number and that sort of thing on the waiver was more designed to track the MRAPs and the larger. I have received and accepted a number of waivers from localities that encompassed all of their shotguns in one waiver and have been, and also simultaneous to that.
Okay. All right. So maybe it won't be as arduous as it seemed. Thank you for that. All right. So any further discussion on this? All right. So as Director Dion said, waivers and all the accompanying documentation will be sent to board members for review before the meeting in May, and we'll be asked to vote on the waivers and address questions at that time. So nothing else? All right, time for public comment. I'll turn the meeting over to Ms. Dion if there's any public comments. If so, please state your name, whether or not you're representing any organization, and try and limit your comments to 4 minutes. Ms. Dion?
Is there anyone on the Zoom call that is a member of the public that would like to address the board? I do not see anything in the chat or anyone otherwise indicating that they have anything to share today. Back to you, Chief.
All right, great. So next meeting is scheduled for May 20th, 2020 at 11 a.m. We'll also be doing that one virtual. Any further business from anyone? All right, hearing none, we'll adjourn at 11:54. Thank you all. We'll see everybody in May.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
All right, nice job, Lorraine. You handled that like a pro. Thank you, sir.
Chief As always.
Roper, so good to see you.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
You did it.
Again, it's always anxiety leading up to these that is worse than the actual meeting itself. Good job. You're muted, but I think
I told Harvey he's nothing but trouble.
What's that?
I told Harvey he's nothing but trouble.
Oh yeah, we should tease him. Like before he said anything, these meetings were like smooth.
Yeah. But good job, Lorraine.
Yeah, great job.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for all your help.
I'll see you guys in a couple of months.
That's not funny. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.